Have you ever felt completely disconnected from your own voice? Hal Incandenza sits in a university admissions office, confident and articulate in his own mind, yet the interviewers hear only animalistic grunts and witness disturbing physical convulsions. This opening scene, chronologically near the novel's end, captures something terrifying about modern existence: the chasm between how we experience ourselves and how others perceive us. David Soster Wallace's masterwork doesn't just tell a story, it constructs a funhouse mirror reflecting our entertainment-addicted, emotionally stunted, achievement-obsessed culture back at us. Written in the mid-1990s, this sprawling novel predicted our current reality with unsettling accuracy, a world where people can't look away from screens, where authentic connection feels nearly impossible, and where the pursuit of pleasure becomes a form of slow-motion suicide. Hal Incandenza embodies the terrifying endpoint of American achievement culture. Raised at the elite Enfield Tennis Academy by a grammar-obsessed mother and brilliant but alcoholic filmmaker father, he can recite obscure literature with mechanical precision, yet describes himself as feeling far more robotic than John Wayne, the Academy's top player. Think of those perfectly curated social media profiles, flawless surfaces hiding internal emptiness. Wallace structures Hal's story through fragments scattered across time, revealing his gradual disintegration from multiple angles. He appears functional but secretly smokes marijuana in the Academy's pump room, seeking escape from emotional numbness. His recurring nightmares about crumbling teeth become a visceral metaphor for his dissolving sense of self. Only his physically disabled brother Mario glimpses his authentic feelings. Mario's own limitations paradoxically free him from the performance anxiety imprisoning Hal. Hal's tragedy resonates because it feels so familiar. How many of us have learned to manipulate emotional variables to satisfy others while remaining internally disconnected? His father, James, created experimental films desperately trying to reach his son, believing Hal was mute to him, a tragic misunderstanding revealing how families can live together yet remain fundamentally alone. This communication failure haunts the entire novel, questioning whether genuine connection is even possible when we're all trapped inside our own perceptions. At the novel's heart lies a lethal film so addictive that viewers watch it repeatedly until they die of dehydration. Created by Hal's father before his suicide, this entertainment serves as Wallace's perfect metaphor for our relationship with pleasure. Wheelchair-bound Quebecois terrorists seek the master copy to weaponize against America, planning mass distribution that would let citizens choose their own destruction through their inability to resist. Wallace's vision feels prophetically accurate today. The novel depicts people consuming entertainment in isolated cocoons, then desperately craving public gatherings, spectops, where crowds witness real events, seeking the fellowship and anonymous communion of being part of a watching crowd. We binge watch alone, then scroll through social media desperately seeking connection. The entertainment's victims mirror modern technology addiction with disturbing precision. Test subjects become reduced to roughly the mental/spiritual energies of a moth, able only to repeat phrases from the film. Medical reports detail the progression: initial fascination, complete withdrawal, finally a vegetative state. Wallace poses a devastating question. If Americans truly possess self-restraint, why would the government fear this entertainment's release? The vulnerability reveals a cultural death preceding physical collapse, our inability to resist immediate pleasure even when it destroys us. Down the hill from the Tennis Academy sits Ennett House Drug and Alcohol Recovery, where Wallace explores addiction's opposite. Don Gately, a former burglar and Demerol addict, becomes the novel's unlikely moral center. Despite his criminal past, Gately demonstrates authentic heroism through humility, cooking meals, mediating conflicts, and following a recovery program he doesn't fully understand. Wallace captures Alcoholics Anonymous with precision, depicting meetings where speakers share the same trajectory: initial pleasure, diminishing returns, mounting losses, failed attempts to control use, and finally, complete surrender. Members share shock when the program inexplicably works, though nobody can explain how sitting in folding chairs, listening to cliches, keeps them sober. The program's paradoxes become profound insights. There are no musts, only suggestions. But as one character jokes, these suggestions are like recommending a parachute when jumping from a plane. Gately's transformation comes when his craving mysteriously lifts after months of mechanically following suggestions, daily prayer on his knees despite feeling like a hypocrite. This paradox counterpoints the novel's themes of intellectual control. Sometimes surrender achieves what willpower cannot. The Incandenza family embodies different responses to emotional trauma. James, the father, was a child tennis prodigy turned optical physicist and experimental filmmaker. His suicide by microwave oven haunts every page. Avril, the mother, hides manipulation behind extreme politeness, holding her feelings like a terrorist with a hostage. After her husband's death, she forms an inappropriate relationship with a student. Oren, the eldest son, escapes through professional football and serial seduction, cycling through excitement, hope, acquisition, contempt, as he seeks to feel he is the one to each woman. His inability to maintain genuine connections stems from unresolved family trauma, a pattern many recognize in their own relationships. Mario, the middle son, has severe physical disabilities, yet possesses emotional authenticity that makes him beloved. His hour-long nightly prayers are not a chore, but more like a conversation, providing a moral compass lacking in others. Through this family's dynamics, Wallace explores how genius and dysfunction intertwine. James's brilliance came at the expense of emotional connection. Hal inherited his father's intellect, but also the emptiness it created. The question becomes, what does excellence cost? When we optimize for achievement, what human capacities do we sacrifice? Infinite Jest reveals life as recursive loops. Addiction and recovery, pleasure and pain, connection and isolation that resist linear progression. The novel's structure mirrors this, beginning near its chronological end and circling through multiple timelines without conventional closure. This isn't frustrating, it's honest. Life doesn't resolve neatly. Wallace's profound insight emerges through Gately's recovery. Breaking these loops requires acceptance rather than denial. Gately learns to live completely in the moment, building walls around each second rather than projecting into an unbearable future. No single instant is unendurable. What's unbearable is thinking about all the instants stretching ahead. This present moment awareness offers a path forward that acknowledges life's recursive nature without being trapped by it. The novel concludes without resolving its central mysteries. What happened to Hal? Was the entertainment contained? This deliberate ambiguity forces us to confront our desire for neat resolution, inviting us into a more complex relationship with narrative that mirrors life's unresolved nature. We live in the world Wallace predicted, isolated by entertainment, addicted to screens, struggling to connect authentically. Infinite Jest offers no easy solutions, but something more valuable: recognition. It holds up a mirror to our entertainment-saturated, achievement-obsessed, emotionally disconnected culture, and asks, "What are you willing to surrender to become free?" The answer might require putting down your phone, admitting powerlessness, and daring to live fully in this single, infinite moment. The only way out of the loop is through presence, choosing to be here, now, even when here feels unbearable.